You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. As always, we've got a ton of stuff to get to. We're going to send it to Las Vegas, Nevada, like we often do. Ted Savransky is going to join us from Ted's Sportsbook and Casino. If you look for Ted's Sportsbook and Casino on Expedia, it's not there. It's for VIP patrons only. Ted's Sportsbook and Casino, Sportsbook Director, Teddy Savransky joins us. And unfortunately, this is going to be the last time Teddy joins us for, I don't know, I guess about 6 weeks or something like that. Teddy's going underground for a month or so this summer, a little summer hiatus for Ted Savransky. So it's our last kick at the can with Teddy. We'll talk, of course, some NBA basketball. We'll also talk the shocking developments out of Norman, Oklahoma. Bob Stoops steps down after 18 years in a national championship. And there's got to be something here. We don't know what it is, all right? I know somebody in Oklahoma, and they told me, oh, there's something going on here. They said they'll get back to us. They never got back to us. So, I don't know. I guess I can sort of find out in the coming days. But in all sincerity, seriously, Bob Stoops wasn't planning on retiring right now. He said, oh, I felt like the time was right. Why? Why was the time right? Is there big violations coming? Do you have health issues? A lot of people are thinking health issues. And Bob Stoops' father, I believe, passed away at the age of 58. And I think Stoops is 56 right now. Stoops is 56. But every time we, you know, every time a college coaches are like heavy metal bands, all right? They don't go anywhere, man. It's like Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer left Florida and he said, I want to spend time with my family. Well, evidently, Urban Meyer hates his family because he took a job about 2 months later at Ohio State. So whenever you hear someone, well, whenever someone says it's not about the money, it's about the money, right? But whenever you hear a college coach say, I want to spend time with my family, which means NCAA violations coming, I got an NFL gig, I got a TV gig. Pete Carroll wanted to spend time with his family too. Yeah, his family that are like Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, and everybody else. But nevertheless, we'll talk about that. Hey, listen, I already liked Oklahoma State a lot. I love Oklahoma State, and I'm a man! Gundy's now the man in Oklahoma, and I'm high on the Cowboys right now. Fired up for some college football. We'll talk a little NFL football with Teddy as well. What else is going on tonight? Oh, yeah. We got a big hockey game, a real big hockey game. And unlike the NBA Finals, there's a lot of racetrack left in the Stanley Cup Finals. The Cup is going to be in the building no matter what. And you know, it's one of these deals, actually, where I almost feel bad. You know, you never know what you have until it's gone. And it's life's tough like that. You never know what you have until it's gone. And I used to really hate that dude. I forget the guy's name. What was his name? Phil Pritchard? Phil Prickett? Something. You know, the blonde dude. He had the white gloves with the Stanley Cup all the time. He was walking around. He's in the commercials and stuff. I was like, dude, you don't own the Stanley Cup, all right? It's not yours. The guy asks, hey, don't touch the cup. Hey, it's not yours. You're just some stooge that works for the NHL with white gloves. And I used to rip this guy all the time, but he's not around anymore, and I feel bad. I hope he's all right. Wherever you are, annoying dude with the white gloves, you've got to be there. That's part of the Stanley Cup lure. You boo Gary Bettman, and you rip the dude, the blonde dude with the white gloves. Like, I miss you, man. Wherever you are, I hope you're okay, and I mean it. All right, what else do we have going on? Phil Bork's going to join us. Phil Bork, camera two, Drew, very, you know, he got excited. Bork, what, hockey? Bork. But I tell you what, Phil Bork's actually a distant relative of Raymond Bork. Yeah, they're of course, you know, they're Borks. They're Borks. Except I'll tell you what, Phil Bork has one more Stanley Cup championship than Raymond does. Two-time Stanley Cup champion, Pittsburgh Penguin radio analyst. Phil Bork will join us on the program. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup. I've been killing the Stanley Cup, but I should shut up because anytime I boast, I get smacked down. So I'm doing horrible. Shh. Not doing good. Nothing's going good. I did get screwed in that basketball game last night, but that's another story. George Kurtz going to join us. Big game in the Bronx tonight. Talk a little baseball. Of course, Kurtz loves the pucks. So as I promised, we got a ton of stuff to get to. Well, that was fast as the Cleveland Cavaliers let him off the hook. And may Dennis Green rest in peace right now. But last night was the definition of letting him off the hook. Last night was a definition of, you want to crown her ass? That was the definition of it. Like, you know, they are who we thought they were. You know, like, it's one of those type of deals. Yeah, that's tough. My toughest sporting loss ever in my life. I made it to the Final Four of the Montreal City Championships when I was like 11 years old, 12 years old type of deal in hockey. We won our league. You know, we won all those tournaments and stuff. And we made it to the big boy tournament at the end. Final Four, I was the goalie. We lost 1-0. All right? I swear to God, what's it been? It's been 32 years since that game. Still pisses me off to this day. It still bothers me. Should have stopped the puck. If I could have stopped, hey, we got outshot like 22-12 or something like that. But hey, it is what it is. Tough loss. And I was thinking last night, it doesn't matter if you've won before. You think because LeBron and J.R. Smith and these guys have won before was any easier in the room last night? It's even worse. Because if you're some stooge loser, you don't even know what it's like to win. They do. They freaking had it. You had the game. I had the plus 145 money line. I did give you LeBron James to be the high scorer at plus 175. And he was. And we'll give you another high score tomorrow night. We're now 2-0 with our high scores at big money in this series. But nevertheless, very disappointing. LeBron James was freaking epic, man. That was one of the best games I've ever seen him play. It was one of the best big game performances that we've seen. Yeah, we've seen dudes drop 55 and 52 in the playoffs and Reggie Miller and Jordan and Bird and all this type of stuff. But LeBron was doing everything, man. He was blocking shots, assists, rebounds. He was carrying the Cleveland Cavaliers like a great player does. Big players make big plays in big games. And LeBron James is making one big play after another one. So was Kyrie Irving. But in similar fashion to the Atlanta Falcons, the Cleveland Cavaliers just did everything they could possibly do wrong. And remember, the Atlanta Falcons kept throwing the freaking football all the time, man. And you're like, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, we had that moment last night. And a lot of people want to talk about Kyrie Irving and the ill-advised late three that he took. I'm looking at LeBron, all right? And my criticism of LeBron James in past years, and I've been pumping LeBron's tires a lot over the last month or so, but my criticism of why I always said he's not Kobe, he's not Jordan, he's not Bird, he's not Magic, because he doesn't hit these big shots. And it's not just hitting the specific shot. But it's taking over the moment. He took over 47 and a half moments, but he didn't take over the last 30 seconds when it counted the most. Cleveland Cavaliers are up one. LeBron's at the top of the key. He's got the basketball, and I'm thinking in past years, this is when he's going to pass it off. He looks up to the shot clock. He lets the shot clock. It's going down. Shot clock's coming down. The game clock's coming down. It's down to about 12 seconds left in the basketball game. Cleveland Cavaliers, you guys are up. You're up. You know, all you got to do, you can close it out. All you got to freaking do, you know, is take it to the rack, take it to the rack. And, you know, I forget the exact time of the game that it was. They're up one, you know, it was 18 seconds, whatever the clock started to dwindle there at the end. LeBron's got it. He takes it to the rack. He goes to the line. Draymond Green had five fouls, too. He would have fouled them anyways. So Draymond would have got knocked out of the game. LeBron would have went to the line, hit both. You're up three. Instead, he passes it off to Kyle Korver. Why? Why? It's like throwing the football when you're up in the Super Bowl. What the hell are you doing? Run the freaking clock. It's like gravity. You're LeBron James. Take it to the rack. Don't put the ball in the hands of Kyle freaking Korver, of all people. But hey, when it's all said and done, I thought we could go six, seven games in this series. We're not. Bust out the brooms. It's over on Friday night. And now, are the Golden State Warriors the greatest team ever? Well, I don't know. Nobody's ever run the table in the playoffs before. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues, and Glenn McDonald in the Master Control has told me, yeah, it's Phil Pritchard. So hopefully Phil Pritchard's all right. Either that or, I don't know, he's probably like the vice president of hockey operations for the NHL or something like that now. Speaking of hockey, Phil Bourque's going to join us, two-time Stanley Cup champion, Pittsburgh Penguin radio analyst. He'll step up and in. George Kurtz, roto expert. Ted Savransky joins us. Bats leadoff. What's up, Teddy?
Bar and see. What's a good word today, my friend?
Always a pleasure, Teddy. This is the last time you'll be joining us for about a month or so. Little summer hiatus for Ted Savransky. So we've got a lot of stuff to get to today, Teddy.
Yeah, I mean, look, Vegas is great in May. It's great in April. It's great in March. Vegas stinks in June and July. So I'm leaving town for as much time as I can get out of here. You know, you still got to do your work every day.
We had a good time that time, though. Remember years ago, you, me, T-Bone, and a couple of guys over at the Green Valley Ranch on the 4th of July.
That was a lot of fun. It was a good day.
T-Bone was a high roller, the free cabana and free suites and stuff like that. We hit the CFL game. Good times.
That was awesome. Yeah, you know, but you don't come around anymore, Gabe. We miss you.
I know. I don't come like I used to. Hey, you checked airfare recently?
Yeah, it's brutal.
In the old days, seriously, I'm not even kidding, Teddy. You know, in the old days, $500, you get a room and your flight and you're good. You know, last time I came down, it cost me $1,900 for two people.
Even
the El Cortez is $50 a night now.
El Cortez, a nice joint.
Yeah, you know what though? I'm going to be coming back, and I'm kind of in a quandary here because me and T-Bone are going to go to the the Alvarez Gennady fight.
Oh, cool.
September 16th at T-Mobile Arena. But I got to get into the contests as well, Teddy. So it's really pissing me off.
You're going to have to come down twice. Huh?
Yeah, I don't really want to, though.
In theory, you could send someone else down the first time as your proxy to meet with your proxy.
That's what I was thinking. I'll tell Blessing I'll kick him away. What's fair for that? 10%? Maddie doesn't take a cut anymore, but I got to pay him. But let's just say a guy. Let's say hypothetically you. We're negotiating. Hypothetically, what's a fair thing for something like that? You think 10%?
Normally, and again, there's the different guys charge different rates, but the rates that I've been hearing quoted around town is between $300 and $500 for the season, plus anywhere from 5 to 10% of any winnings.
Yeah, see, it's getting to the point where this stuff, it just boxes you out of the contest, Teddy. It becomes too annoying. Are you going all in and all these again?
No, I mean, when we're talking about a contest now that has close to 2,000 people in it last year, it's likely to be more this year. You know, we're starting to talk, but it's more about hitting a lottery ticket and less about how good you are as a handicapper. So, you know, the same thing happened with the main event of the World Series of Poker. And unfortunately, it's not the contest is worth, as a professional handicapper, a win in that contest is worth a lot more than the $1 million that you're going to get from the fees. But when you start talking about your chances as 1 in 2,000, you know, you have one bad week, you're in trouble. You know?
Yeah, tell me about it. I know.
I mean, it's a very hard contest.
I'm kicking the tires on the Nugget contest this year. I don't know. We'll see.
What about the higher? I figure you'd be in the high roller contest now.
Grand
winner take all.
High roller. My complete wardrobe's worth about $79, Teddy. So it's five dimes take all. I mean, a couple other people. Hey, Marenzi, you're in the high roller? I'm like, what do you guys think I am? Like, I'm in the high roller contest in Vegas. 5,000 entry.
Well, I mean, and the high roller contest, look, I like the concept.
So
the
winner take all, right? That's simple as that.
The winner take all immediately precludes me from being in that contest. I have no interest.
Me too. If they think that's an attraction, no, you're putting five dimes up. I want to hear, no, you got a chance to get some money back. Yeah, I don't know, but it's interesting. And the fact that we won money 2 years ago, Teddy, I'm almost locked into this stupid contest too, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's like, wow, what do you mean you didn't enter? You won $55,000. How can you not enter? Like,
yeah, where's that money now?
I tell you, me and T-Bone are the most disgruntled winners in the history of the contest. Like, nobody hates the contest. With all due respect to Maddie, we give Maddie a tough time. Like, the whole thing just bothers me, Teddy. You know what I mean? Here's my money.
Maddie has so many clients.
I remember the old days when I was doing a show at Don Best. I think he had like 60 or 70. Now what's he got, 800 or something? He's like an enterprise.
Well, whatever number you give me, I'm taking the order. It's literally a full-time gig for him now.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
In a way that it never was, obviously, before.
Yeah, T-Bone always freaks him out and tells him, I'm going to start my own proxy business. T-Bone worked it out. He's like, you son of a bitch, I think you made $300,000 last year.
Yeah, I mean, Maddie's not the only guy in Vegas that does that. You know,
but he's the most trustworthy.
Well, he's done a very good job of getting his brand out there.
You're right.
Whereas, you know, look at Andy Isco has been doing that for, you know.
Well, good point. That. You're good.
Yeah, the good Andy, he's just fine. He's everybody's reliable, but he's, you know, Andy's not much of a marketer.
No, that's the thing. And Andy's tougher. I tried Andy before. Andy's tougher to get in touch with. Exactly. Andy's not sitting there in front of his computer.
Yeah,
Vegas proxy, Vegas proxy, Vegas proxy. Yeah. All right, anyways, let's jump in here. really sucked last night, Teddy. I was about to really snap, man. You know, I hit some team totals and stuff, so I did all right. I had LeBron James, high score, plus 175. But I didn't take the points. I was like, the points are irrelevant. I'm taking the money line on the Cavaliers. And I was about to snap, Teddy. I was so mad they blew the lead. And I'm like, dear God, if they lose by three and I lose because I took the money line only, I'm going to like throw my computer off the balcony type stuff. And they ended up, I felt bad for the guys. I wish people would have won, actually. But son of a bitch, what a bad beat last night.
Yeah, really tough. I mean, it makes Pirates backers feel better, maybe. You know, cause Pittsburgh's had two brutal beats in MLB.
Or reminds Atlanta Falcon players in the Super Bowl.
The Falcons, I'm not getting over the Falcons, dude. And it's already, and we're in June now, and I'm still not over the Falcons, which is a problem. So the less we talk about it, the better. But, I mean, and this wasn't a Falcon situation. It wasn't a 28-3 lead. It's like, you know, Cleveland was, you know, they punched and Golden State counterpunched. What was the biggest Cavs lead in the fourth quarter? They brought maybe six?
Yeah, you know, you're right. The real sort of lockdown spot, you had them 113-107. And yeah. I think Durant slashed in. It was sort of that, guys, you got to get one more basket and you got this type of deal.
Sure. And they went 0-for, I mean, they didn't score in their last eight possessions, their nine possessions, what it was.
Whoa.
You know, they didn't score the last 3 minutes of the game. And the Warriors obviously closed out an 11-0 run. That happens sometimes in the regular season, and we talk about it, and it's gone in a matter of minutes. It happens in the postseason. All of a sudden, oh, my God, the worst beat ever.
I know.
Which it is. I mean, it's a tough beat. No question. If you have the Cavs, that was a tough, tough beat last night.
Well, it's 2.5 hours of you thinking you're about to hit, and it was an exciting game, real high-level basketball.
Let me ask you this, because in the first half, did you really think that Cleveland was a lock to win the game? I didn't think so.
No, everyone, you know what's funny? Everyone ripped them off at the half like it was done. And I was live on the radio, and I said, no, it's not done. I tweeted earlier, I thought it was going to be a classic. But anyways, we got a lot of stuff to get to, Teddy. So tomorrow, I was on Cleveland last night. I can't buy into Cleveland tomorrow at plus six. I think we're busting the brooms out tomorrow, and Golden State books their ticket in infamy in immortality by running the table.
Well, when you think about the motivation of these two squads going into this game, yeah, the Cavs are trying to avoid getting embarrassed. But given that teams in the NBA, in an NBA playoff series that are down 0-3, are 126? 0 for 176? I don't remember. 0 forever. You know, it's never happened. The Cavs obviously know that, you know, their chances of winning this series are a long shot. Do they want to go back to Golden State for a game five? Of course they do, kind of.
In the back of their mind, they're also thinking, I don't want to be standing there watching with the confetti coming down and stuff.
No doubt. And then when you think about what happened with Golden State last year, where they had the 3-1 edge and they didn't put their foot down.
They'd love to do it in Cleveland, too, wouldn't they?
Of course they
would. Like, you know, I know at home, but no. If you're a player, you get the party at home with the parade anyways and stuff. The party's waiting for you when you get off the plane. You want to stick the dagger to LeBron and these guys. We did it in Cleveland.
And immortalities. Well, I mean, 16-0. We've never seen it before. You know, not easy to do, obviously. So I question how hard Cleveland's going to fight when Golden State makes their, you know, Golden State punches. Golden State's going to punch every game. And the Cavs are not a glass gin type of a team, but I worry about that for game five tomorrow. I lean under. I've cashed back-to-back over tickets. I'm not betting over game five. No way.
I agree.
I lean under for this one. I'm surprised. As high as it is.
We've only got like 4 minutes, Teddy, unfortunately, so let's go rapid fire here. Bob Stoops, didn't see this one coming. Well, I don't know what happened here.
Something.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying, no, I thought the timing was right. Lincoln Riley's, you know, it's his time. Yeah, it's his time. He's 33 right now. Yeah, you're giving this kid the job, Teddy. He's younger than you and I. You're giving this guy the job. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you're playing Ohio State in 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln Riley and Tom Herman, the Big 12's two new coaches, combined, their age doesn't equal Bill Snyder's.
So what? I don't know what happened here. Is it health? I mean, Bob Stoops' father died at 58, from what I understand, and was a coach. He's 56 right now. I heard murmurs that he heard something about something, you know, from a doctor, and he stepped down. He denied that yesterday. He said, no, I'm healthy. I just, you know, God, he said he did the God thing. God placed me here. God told me that my work is done here now. So I don't know, Teddy. What do you make of this?
Joe Mixon.
That's the thing, though. But, like, he's been, out of all these scumbag coaches, Stoops a good guy. And Mixon's the only black guy here. But didn't Mixon did miss games. It's not like he's Urban Meyer and, oh, yeah, my guy shot someone in the face. So I didn't tell anyone about it. Like, sure. Stoops isn't a bad guy, but what do you make of this?
Well, first of all, let's talk about what matters to the viewers. That it makes no difference to Oklahoma. I you don't adjust your Oklahoma power rating 0.1.
I was going to ask you that because I keep hitting refresh and it's not moving. Oklahoma's minus 163 to win the Big 12. Yeah. I'm high on Gundy, who's now the king of the state.
He is. And I mean, when I say zero adjustment, I mean literally zero adjustment. Bob Stoops isn't worth anything to any point spread, to any season win total. Oklahoma might be better without him. We'll see.
And their offense might get crazier now too and better. You're right.
Exactly. So the markets are saying it's a yawner as to what happened really behind the scenes. I mean, maybe we find out, maybe we don't. one would think in 2017.
You're saying it's like Trump and Russia. Maybe we find out, maybe we don't.
These things tend to come out in 2017 in a way that they say they didn't in 1997. But as to what really went on behind the scenes, hard to say.
All right, so no major adjustments, says Teddy. All right, NFL, before we get you out of here, Teddy, this is the last time we're going to speak, and next time we talk, we'll be in football mode. Couple of teams, who are you keeping your eye on coming into the year that you want to see? You know, you're going to be paying attention to everyone, but, you know, they'll see their camp, the roster, depth, just how, you know, the vibe, the mood, setting up for the season. Who are a couple of teams you've got your eye on?
Let me talk about two teams from the NFC North that kind of stand out for me as big question marks. Baltimore and Cincinnati, two teams that are both coming off disappointing seasons, expecting a rebound, both teams with significant offseason moves. I mean, the Ravens, they remade their defense, they remade their secondary, the linebacking core, DL, the wide receiver. I mean, Baltimore is going to be a very different looking team now than they were compared to last December. I'm fascinated to watch them and keep a close eye on them in training camp. And the same story with Cincy, where they have a lot of pieces in place. The offensive line is a giant red flag for the Bengals, and I'm going to be watching that offensive line as close as I can, both in terms of news and in terms of in the preseason games and whatever practices you get to see, because if it doesn't gel, that team might be really bad. And if it does gel, the Bengals might be really good.
We got to get out of here, Teddy. We're getting the hook. But I'll tell you what, a team that I'm wondering about, too, the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota Vikings. You know, these guys were talking about a football team to cover 22 out of 24 weeks. And then they hit a wall last year. I wonder, are they what they were last year, or are they a covering machine again? Because everyone's going to be off that bandwagon again, Teddy.
I was surprised at how high that Vikings season win total is. The betting market's initially saying, look for Minnesota to bounce back. Remember, when they win their first five last year, their first six, and then closed out like 2-8 or something? I mean, it was a pretty ugly stretch run, and their offensive line doesn't look a whole lot better on paper now than it did a year ago. And remember, that was with Sam Bradford having the highest completion percentage in the NFL, which is not something you expect to see necessarily year after year.
Yeah, they could use Jeremy Maclin. We got to get out of here. Teddy, safe travels this summer. It's always a pleasure, my man. I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Me too, Gabe. Best of luck.
There's Ted Savransky with us. You can find him over at coversexperts.com. He'll still be posting his picks, but he's going to be traveling a lot over the next couple of weeks. All right, we'll take a quick break. Phil Bork joins us next. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we talked about the NBA Finals being all but done. The fat ladies warming up backstage as we speak. There's a lot of racetrack left in the Stanley Cup Finals, and it doesn't get any better than this, man. I've always said the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best playoffs in sport. I've always said the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win in professional sports. And right now, here we are, all locked up at two. We have a best 2 of 3 for the Stanley Cup. It's been a great series. It's been a strange series, but it's been an entertaining series. Let's talk to a man that's been calling it all on the Pittsburgh Penguins radio network, two-time Stanley Cup champion and all-around badass. Phil Bork joins us. Phil, always a pleasure. How you doing, man?
I'm fantastic. Are you kidding me? We're playing hockey in June. Of course I'm great.
Yeah, you know, the atmosphere just must be electric. Electric in Pittsburgh. Like you said, it doesn't get better than this. You know, best of two of three. Both teams are rested up right now. As a fan, it kind of sucked having to wait a couple of days. But I imagine, Phil, you know, you would have wished in the old days that they gave you this long NBA-style layoff in between games, huh?
That was unheard of. And it didn't matter how far you had to travel, that it was pretty much every other day, which back then you were kind of fine with, especially if you were winning. You wanted to get right back out there again. But to be honest with you, Gabe, you know, losing the two games in Nashville, these 2 days are probably going to help the Penguins more than they're going to help Nashville for a couple of reasons. Number one, Penguins are pretty banged up. And so they're going to heal their bumps and bruises as well as their bruised ego after games three and four that didn't go their way. The other part is Nashville's had 2 days of people, everybody patting them on the back, telling them how great they are, telling them that the cup is in the bag, might as well start planning the parade route, how big a diamond you want in your ring. So they, you know, there's some of that that, you know, they've never been here before to the Stanley Cup Finals before. And so a lot of them will have to control their emotions as well as get game ready physically.
And there is something about Sidney Crosby in these big, big moments. And I know it's cliche, Phil, but it really is true. You've been around a long time. Big players make big plays in big games. And Crosby's been here before, the calmness. And it seems like the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, I liked the Preds the other night. But the Penguins have done such a great job of always bouncing back off of a bad game in the playoffs. Coach Sullivan now 13-3 off of a loss in the playoffs, 13-2 going into the other night. What is it about the resolve of this team, the calmness that they have? Because, hey, listen, I'm not around them, Phil, but when I look at a bench, they're so calm all the time, even under pressure, the Penguins.
No, Gabe, I'm a true believer that most NHL teams are a mirror image of their head coach, and our ice general, Mike Sullivan, is just that. That he has a intensity about him. He has a fire in his belly that you love, but also he has a calmness. He's a great communicator, so when he's delivering his message, whether it's on the bench or in the room, there's a time to peel the paint. There's other times just to have a calmness to your voice, and your team will reflect that. And you're right about Sidney Crosby. He does relish these types of moments. The bigger the game, the better he plays. I thought he was outstanding in game number four. He set up a couple of his teammates, had a breakaway, and scored the Penguins' only goal. And I think for the most part, you can say, okay, that was great in game four, but really in games one, two, and three weren't his best, as well as some other players like Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel.
We're in conversation with Phil Bork. So you mentioned it, and we were talking about going to Vegas off the top of the program. We had a guest on from Vegas, and you're right. If you're the Preds and you're hitting at the blackjack table, the last thing you want is them telling them, yeah, we're closing down this the blackjack section of the casino for a couple hours when you're on a hot streak. And conversely, I thought the Penguins just looked a little tired, Phil. Is that true? Would that be correct? They just look a little slow, man. It's like their skates aren't as sharp as the Preds are or something like that. I think this time off can really help them.
No, fair enough. I think, Gabe, both teams have really fed off the energy in their home building. And, you know, you got to give Nashville credit. Is that I thought maybe in game three they might be too hyped up, and they were early on, but they settled in with the energy of their crowd. And game four, I thought, was their best of the series once they weathered the Penguins storm at the start of the second period. But, yeah, I mean, the Penguins are tired. Nashville's tired. Both teams are exhausted. Both teams are probably covered in black and blue bruises. But that's the playoffs. And you're right off the top, you said it. Why is it the hardest trophy in all sports to win? Because you have to battle through pain that you've never experienced before, heartache, nerves, anxiety. It's all there. And you have to win 16 games. And you have to travel and everything else. So, you know, I think the Penguins, because they play so well on home ice, that they have a confidence, but they don't have a cockiness or an arrogance. They understand the situation. And I think if you told the Penguins, considering the Chris Letang is out of their lineup, if you told them at the beginning of the playoffs game that you would be in the Stanley Cup final, you'd have to get through Columbus, Washington, and Ottawa. You would be tied after four games, 2-2, and you'd have game five in your building. I think every player in that room would take this opportunity.
Phil, it's funny when you see a lot of critics and so-called experts and fans always say, you know, when a coach starts tinkering with lines and moving things at this time of the year, they're like, wow, you're 100 games in. If you're searching for answers now, you have a problem. But you've been a player sometimes just shaking things up a little bit's good for everybody, isn't it? It's almost like a married couple, right? Like, you know, you love each other, but you're bitching all the time, man. You know, maybe it's good. All right, I'm with this new guy, and hey, look, suddenly, you know, this is just a little bit different. You know, so what's the dealer with Sid and the kids? Is this going to be back in rotation tonight?
No, I like your analogy there about a marriage. Sometimes it's good to go to that five-star hotel just when you need that little spark, if you know what I mean, right? Change it up a little bit. Nothing wrong with that. But you're right. You know, I might have a different answer for you if this was something new that Mike Sullivan was trying. Well, maybe he looked a little bit desperate. But this is something since Mike Sullivan came here 2 years ago in December that he's been doing all the time, been changing guys. And I think because he's so brutally honest and he is a great communicator, as I mentioned, that there isn't this big question mark in your head when he makes these changes. He tells you if you're not playing good enough, he lets you know why he's made this change. But if he just makes a change in game, you probably know too, because okay, I'm really not going that well tonight. This guy's going. That's why he got the bump, and that's why I'm down on the fourth line. But they're seamless. When he makes these changes, the players understand. They're used to it. And we have a lot of players that can play different positions, play a left wing, play a right wing, play a wing, play a center. And these players are very comfortable moving around, knowing that their coach will reward them if they're going, but also he'll pull you back a little bit if you're not.
The thing that's impressed me the most about the Predators, we talked about the Penguins' calmness, is for young guys, they really seem to have ice in their veins, these kids. Like, they really do. And, you know, P.K. Subban just embraces the spotlight. He loves it. He soaks it in. But everybody else, and, you know, they lose guys, and it doesn't really seem to matter. You know, they've done a great job of eliminating the other team's best players, from Kane, Toews, Tarasenko, Getzlaff, from the 37 minutes without a shot on goal. What is it about Nashville that's impressed you the most about this hockey club?
Well, first off, is their depth. They roll four lines, and all four lines can score. I think that they have great team speed throughout their lineup. And their top four defensemen, which I didn't think were over-the-top good in games one and two, definitely picked it up in games three and four. And their goaltender played better. I didn't think, a lot of people are just jumping up and down saying Pecorine, just hand him the Conn Smythe trophy already. I thought he was good in games three and four. I made some saves that got you out of your seat. But also, I thought that he was vulnerable.
There were still a couple of hold-your-breath moments. You know, Phil, I used to do the Canadiens post-game show. And remember when Theodore was the MVP? He was the MVP, but he was also a heart attack. So one of these dudes, like, yeah, he was the MVP, but every time, like, there was a shot, you never really knew. And even at home the other night, Pekka would make great saves, but you see him fight the puck other times and not even know where the puck was a lot of the time.
Yeah, and the Penguins didn't take advantage. And that's where they're kind of kicking themselves, is they knew the opportunities were there. And Pekka did. It was long shots. He looked a little shaky on.
Yeah.
He didn't look great on his rebound control. But he battled through it all, and he made some really big saves.
All right, so I got to ask you, I want to have a little fun on the way out here. What's the craziest thing you've seen with the Stanley Cup? Like, we've heard you've had it, so you've gone on the tour. You know, were you the, all right, we're taking it to the golf, to the country club and the golf course type guy? Or were you the guy, you're inviting your old school buddies over to get hammered and drink beer out of it? Do you have a cup story? And what's like a crazy teammate cup story where you're like, holy crap, you did what? And this is family. So I imagine, like me, you know, I'd probably get like six naked chicks, big party, like, you know what I mean? I'd do some stuff that, you know, we could only see on the Howard Stern show, you know what I'm saying, Phil? But
yeah. No. Well,
what did
I'll
you do?
Keep it somewhat G or PG rated, but it's been documented before that I was the one that threw it in Mario Lemieux's swimming pool.
Yeah.
The one year, the other year, I popped the bottom off, and it took me 3 hours with a six-pack of beer on ice and a screwdriver to scratch my name on the inside, engraved my name on the inside. So I was the only guy to have my name on the outside and the inside.
I heard about that. I wanted you to tell it. So did the NHL bitch at you about that and say, hey, don't do that ever again? Huh? Like,
No. They never said a word, but we had our 20-year reunion in 2001, and I asked, and they didn't have a keeper of the cup back then, the guy with the white glove.
Yeah.
We were able to do whatever we want. But now they do, and I asked him about it. I was like, hey, do you know I put my name on the inside? He said, yeah, we know all about it. I go, is anybody mad at me? They're like, no, we thought it was hilarious. So it's no big deal.
How did you get it off? Like, were people around you going, hey, Phil, I don't know if this is a good idea, man, to take the cup apart?
No. You know, I was on my living room floor at midnight, the night before I was supposed to give it back, and something had come loose on the inside, so I actually tried to fix it. That was the original plan, was I didn't want to give it back broken. But when I was inside trying to repair it, that's when I had seen some other guys had engraved their name on the inside. So that's when I put the beers on ice and got the screwdriver out and started scratching my name on the inside.
All right, so you sound like a beer type of guy. Mario's all wine. What's the what's the most expensive glass of wine you drank with Mario where he told you, yeah, this bottle's worth like $300K or something?
No, I don't think I rate on the friendship scale for the $300K. I think it was the $10,000 bottle.
You're just a radio guy, right? If Yaramir comes over, he busts out the better stuff, you're saying.
You got that right, yeah. When, Ronnie Francis or Paul Coffey or Mark Recchi, you know, those guys come over, then he busts out the big stuff.
All right, Phil, we know you're busy, so before we get you out of here, I think Pittsburgh bounces back tonight. You know, we talked about it. Sullivan was 13-2 off a loss in the playoffs. They've done a great job of bouncing back and being resilient. Penguins, 5-0 their last five home games. They've only given up 6 goals. Matt Murray on a 12-2 run at home in the playoffs. I like Pittsburgh tonight. I think they get it done, but I think this sucker's going 7 games still.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a homer series where just everybody wins on home ice, and you're right about the Penguins. You know, it was tough. The Penguins won the first 2 games. It's tough to beat the same opponent, Gabe, 3 straight games. The Penguins beat the Preds the first 2, couldn't beat them the third one. The Preds have won the last 2. We'll see how this one plays out tonight.
Hey, great stuff, Phil. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us, man.
My pleasure. I enjoyed the game. It's good hockey talk.
There's Phil Borka with his great stuff. We could have went on all day long, but we got George Kurtz coming up. We got a ton of picks for you. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. It's amazing. I just threw out a blind reference about the guy with the gloves and the cup. And you hear Phil Bork. Yeah, in the old days, you didn't have that blonde guy with the gloves. Everyone knows the guy, even Phil Bork brought it up. I didn't even bring it up to Phil Bork. He goes, yeah, when I got the cup, they didn't have the blonde guy with the gloves. Let's bring in another blonde guy. No gloves, George Kurtz. What's up, George?
How you doing, Gabe?
Actually, you know, blonde. Let's bring in the bald guy. But were you blonde if you had hair?
It's blonde. I just shaved it at the first of every month, but it's there.
Yeah, it's there. Like, mine's gone, but it's kind of pathetic. I'm getting old. You know, I haven't shaved my head in a couple of days. I'm looking like Anderson Cooper.
Listen, I got the beard going, the scruffy look. I got the 5 o'clock shadow going, and it's 3 o'clock.
Yeah, it's my life story. All right, so yeah, we just had a lot of fun with Phil Bork on the show. Remember him, 2-time cup champion with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Real partier, too. He was telling us about how he engraved his name inside the cup. He took the cup into Mario Lemieux's pool. Good times. Imagine hanging with Mario Lemieux, man. A lot of good wine in that cellar.
There are going to be some really great stories with the cups. We've heard plenty of stories. I think the ones I find most interesting are guys who have dropped the cup. Or, you know, that it gets misplaced. You've seen that. You've heard about that.
The guys have actually lost the Stanley Cup before. Yep. Yeah. They got so drunk, they're like, oh, dear God, I left the Stanley Cup at a strip club. And they're like, you know, they're going back. You're right. It's been lost a couple of times over the years. I like the Dallas, and may rest in peace, the metal band Pantera. Dallas, Pantera was the official, like, music for the Dallas Stars when they won. And Pantera threw a big party. So it was a big pool party, bunch of chicks, Pantera, metal band, and like the cup and stuff. Supposedly it was like an epic, epic, epic party with the Dallas Stars and Pantera. But I'd love to be there. So the question is, George, is Sidney Crosby going to be partying with the cup in a very boring manner? You know, Crosby's going to have like a Pepsi with the cup. He wouldn't even do anything. Or is P.K. Subban going to be bringing the cup back to Montreal and say, screw you, Montreal?
Fill it up with Listerine, man. I think P.K. Subban's going to win that cup by game 6. Pittsburgh has to win tonight. If you think Nashville's been crazy the first 2 games, imagine if game 6 is a win for the Stanley Cup for Nashville. Winning the cup. that place will be going bananas. You can make an argument. Nashville's outplayed Pittsburgh 10 of these 12 periods. Pittsburgh's lucky to be tied at two.
You're right. You could argue that the series could be over. Game one, Pekka-Rinne was terrible. He cost them the game. Let's just be honest. Game two, they deserve better. In reality, I think they should be up 3-1 right now. But Pittsburgh have been very resilient, and I threw some numbers out here a couple of minutes ago. Listen, Rinne allowed 8 goals on 38 shots in the first two games. He was terrible. And it's not really just an anomaly. He's always better at home than he is on the road. Meanwhile, you got Matt Murray. He's getting a call again tonight. He's 6-0 in his last 6 home games. Murray's 12-2 in his last 14 home playoff games. The Penguins are 5-0 in their last 5 home playoff games. They've only surrendered 6 goals in their last 5 home playoff games. To me, I like the Penguins tonight, George.
I think sometimes, I've already said it, right? 10 out of 12 periods, Nashville's outplayed them. Nashville, I think, has outplayed them mostly for the series, but we forget. I mean, you got Sidney Crosby, you got Jenny Malkin, you got Phil Kessel. You have a lot of maybe future Hall of Famers, certainly in the first two there for Pittsburgh. They're not going to lay down and die for Nashville tonight. That being said, the pressure in my mind is all on Pittsburgh because I think Nashville knows they're not losing Game 6 at home. So this is gravy for them. You already said it, though. It's Rinne. If Rinne plays well tonight, I think Nashville wins. But he has never won in Pittsburgh. Never. That's a weird little thing there. He can't win there, and he didn't play well the first two games. I would give Pittsburgh the edge tonight, but it doesn't shock me at all if Nashville is just riding this momentum, and they close it out in 5 and 6.
I said this yesterday with Chris Meaney, and we didn't really have enough time to elaborate on it, so I'll bring it up to you right now. It's the one thing that is very cruel about hockey, and I don't know if the best team always wins. It's almost like the NCAA tournament. The best team doesn't automatically win the NCAA tournament. They happen to be in a bracket. They happen whatever. You don't really know whether they're the best team or not. And Nashville have been the better team. Nashville have been the better team. Yet I think they're going to find themselves down 3-2 right now. George, in football, the better team always wins. We can talk about Joe Namath winning. That was 40 years ago, all right? You know what I'm saying? Football, the better team wins. Basketball, we see. You have the stars, you win. Baseball, I'm not going to say the stars win, but generally, the good teams win. The fundamental good team will win. But hockey, it really is a crapshoot, man. It's crazy. You can dominate the other team, but if your goalie doesn't make saves, you're screwed.
Hockey's the one sport where one player can win it. You mentioned, I'll go the reverse. If the goalie's not letting anything in, you're not going to win. If he's playing with a brick wall behind him, a plexiglass, you can't get the puck by him. And we've all seen this.
Yep.
Where a goalie just gets hot at the right time, you can't win. But the reverse is also true. If he's letting in soft goals, it's deflating for the whole team. Because everyone knows that puck should have been stopped. That shouldn't have gone in. And you play differently. All of a sudden, defense plays a little tighter because they don't want to let in those shots. Maybe they're not chipping in like they normally would. Change your game. I totally agree with you. Hockey's the one sport where it could be dominated, one for the good or for the bad, by the goaltender.
Yeah, you're right. We'll get to the baseball in a second here, George. But, the Predator players will never say this publicly, but you know damn well tonight, they're all holding their breath early in this game with Pekka. If they see he makes a couple of great saves early, you're right. Suddenly, they're going to be flying around. And, just like you said, the defenseman to go, man, he's good. He's good. He's on his game, man. Let's go for it. We're going to push. As opposed to, oh, God, man, he's nervous. Pekka's falling apart here. I better not do this. I better not pinch. I better not try to make this pass. I better play it safe. You're right. It's a domino effect. The people that don't understand the sport don't understand how the goalie can affect everybody in front of him as well. And that's why oftentimes when the backup plays, the team wins. They play more responsible. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They're like, all right, let's not screw around. Hey, let's give this goalie, let's try to help him out a bit. Okay, big game tonight. So who do you like tonight? Quickly, prediction tonight.
I'm going to Nashville. 10 or 12 periods they've won. I think they're going to ride the momentum. Even though, honestly, if I was putting money on the game, I'd probably go Pittsburgh. That's how weird that is. I want to say Nashville, they played so well, but if it came down to cold, hard cash, I'd go Pittsburgh.
Red Sox and Yankees in the Bronx. David Price on the hill. He was solid in his return. 1 run, 3 hits, and 7 innings against Baltimore. But he was 1-3 with a 7.89 earned run average last year against the Bombers. 5-6 in his career. Panetta got hit hard in his last start, but you know the numbers. 5-1 in the Bronx, 2.31 ERA at home.
Yeah, Pineda's had a trouble in his last two starts now. He did beat Oakland the start before that, but he had runners on base, didn't look like his normal crisp self. Certainly wasn't good against Toronto his last start. Boston, not quite the hitting team they used to be. Losing Ortiz has certainly changed the dynamic of that lineup. And you put it out about Price. His numbers against the Yankees are not good for whatever reason. Usually lefties do well against the Yankees, but not David Price. I don't know why that is. As a Yankee fan, I can't tell you why that is. But they seem to see the ball well of him, and they hit him well. I expect it to be a decent I don't think it's going to be an 8-7 game tonight. I think it's going to be a close game, more in the 4-3 range. I'll give the edge to the Yankees.
Mookie Betts struggling again. He's been struggling for a little while now. Chris Carter on a 4-for-8 streak, two home runs. And we got to get out of here, George. We got about 30 seconds. But Volquez comes off as no-hitter. You know, and just in my mind, I was thinking guys usually suck off a no-hitter. And historically they have, but recently they haven't as much. I'm interested by this. Nobody's ever thrown back-to-back no-hitters before, just for the record.
Well, he's got a good shot. Pittsburgh is not the greatest hitting team, but it won't happen. And I agree with you. First thing I think of, no-hitter, guy never does well second start.
Yeah, nobody goes nine innings anymore either, right? So we got to get out of here. George, always a pleasure, my man. Enjoy the game.
You too, Gabe. Enjoy.
Going to come back with our plays of the day next. All right, it's time for some hockey. A huge game tonight. Massive game tonight. We've been on fire. We've been playing the home team in every game, and I don't really see a reason to change course this evening. Pittsburgh Penguins, man, they're 5-0 in their last five home games. They've only surrendered six goals in their last five playoff home games. You know, Matt Murray's 12-2 in his last 14 playoff home games, and Coach Sullivan is 13-3 in the last 16 playoff games, coming off a loss. It all adds up to Pittsburgh tonight. I think Nashville get it done when they go back home, and this series goes seven games. I'm going to go under the number. Little treacherous in case Thursday there's an empty netter, but I think it's going to be a lower scoring game. No goal in the first 9:30. Arizona Diamondbacks. You know that the D-backs are 11-1 in Corbin's last 12 starts. Yankees, Price gets lit up whenever he pitches at Yankee Stadium. Marlins and Pirates tonight. Volquez coming off that no-hitter. Normally guys really suck off a no-hitter. I have a feeling he's going to be pretty good tonight. It's against Cole. Give me under 8.5, and Pittsburgh can't hit. They don't have any offense. And finally, don't look now, but the Seattle Mariners are scorching hot. Bergman's pitching well, too. We're going to lay the price with the Seattle Mariners. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.